What's up, everyone? This is the one and only Nick Andre. And look, if you're a fan of everything that I do, whether it's writing, podcasting, or anything basketball content related, make sure to subscribe to my playback room. I will be live every Friday live streaming an NBA game. So I will be talking everything about the game itself alongside various topics revolving around basketball. So make sure to tune in, man. Make sure to subscribe. I will leave the link in the description. And let's get into the episode. Another edition of For the Love of the Game. This is your one and only Nick Andre. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. I got a special guest with me, man. This guy is like family to me, man. You know, we've been rocking for about a few years now, man. You may have seen him all over your timeline from time to time, man. He might be hosting the Spaces covering Raising Kanan. He might be covering all of college sports as a whole. The creator of The Lion's Den, which is a publication people need to check out. And then, of course, is the host of Generations of the Game. I got my guy, Will Lyons, man. What's up, man? Happy to have you on.
Hey, bro. It's a privilege to be here, brother. Thanks for having me.
Nah, no doubt, man. So we're going to talk about your team, the one that you've been rocking with, the Kentucky Wildcats. So before we really dive into the team, when did you become a fan of Kentucky? Like, was it like since you were a kid, or did you like kind of get with the team as you got older?
So it was a two-part thing, man. So the first thing, I always rocked with Cal, you know, being from New Jersey. You know, growing up when, you know, DeJuan Wagner was the guy, you know, we always rock with Cal. But then, you know, my cousin, you know, Kid Gilchrist.
I forgot I was your cousin. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but it actually wasn't a basketball thing. So, you know, Mike signed with Kentucky and, you know, my cousin, Mike's uncle, Darren, actually, he passed away from a heart attack. You know, God rest his soul. Definitely. And, you know, I'm at the funeral and Cal is there, bro, like chilling with the family, like, you know, like, and
that's real.
Yeah. Like that spoke volumes to me, you know, it's bigger than basketball. You know what I mean?
Nah, that's real. But I didn't even know that story, man. I mean, that just shows how dope of a coach, you know, Cal is, not even just on the court, but definitely off the court as well, you know, taking care of others and all that, man. So that's dope, man. So before we dive into it, so do you have like a favorite Kentucky team or like a favorite season since you became a fan?
I mean, I'm biased, man. You see my shirt, like 2012 national champion, you know.
It's not bad.
AD
and the guys.
You know, Mike. But if I had to pick a team outside of that, I would say, you know, people probably not expecting this. They expect the Wall team. But I loved watching Fox and Monk and Bam, bro. Like, loved
that team was lit, man.
Yes, bro.
Especially when they beat UCLA that year.
Man, fire, crazy, bro. Listen, I rewatch that video at least once a year, bro, watching Fox fire Lonzo's ass up. Pause.
Mm-hmm. Now, what'd you think about the what year was that, 15, with Cat, D-Book, and those guys? Mm-hmm. What'd you think about that?
Bro, that was a special team, and little short story, I'll keep it brief, you know, but cool. You know, I was in the military at that time, man. That was back in my as my wife would call it, the backsliding days. You know, I'm at the bar watching that game, bro. That was probably the most painful loss of my life, both literally and figuratively, bro. Like, I didn't even remember, you know what I'm saying? Like, I woke up, bro, like, yo, what the hell happened? Like, my friends is like, bro, you was trashed, like, after the loss, bro. You just kept drinking, like, you know what I mean? Like, but
it was
special team, man. Like, as far as Cal's teams, top to bottom, you'd be hard pressed to find a more talented team, you know.
No, I get that. I definitely get that, man. Now, I'll be real. The reason why I brought up 15, I don't know why, it just kind of came up to mind for me, but I like that team as well. But no, I mean, you mentioned a 17 team. I mean, that year when they had Fox and then Malik Monk and then Bam Adebayo, you know, that was a special team. Was Hero on that team too? I can't remember. Or he may have came a little bit later.
You said who?
Hero, Tyler Hero?
Nah, he was after.
He
was on a team with Shea.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But nah, I definitely appreciate you for giving us that insight, man, especially as a Kentucky fan. But let's dive into this year's team. And it's crazy, too, man. Shout out to my guy, Kevin Vance. But he was telling me, man, he was like, yo, like Kentucky basketball is back. And it was like, I knew that they were winning, you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw the success, but it's like, as I went back and watched the games yesterday and today, I was like, man, like, this team is really, really good, man. Like, they can really make some noise. So, they're 10-2 on the season. They're ranked number 6 in the top 25. So, my first question is, as we dive into the season, what has been your biggest takeaway throughout these 12 games?
My biggest takeaway, the first few things is this team has a fight that, not to talk down, but, you know, some of the more recent teams haven't had. You know, you can see it, like, and I'll start with DJ. Like, he hates losing, man. Like, you know, going back to high school, AAU, all of that. Like, he damn near want to go in an opposing team locker room and scrap if they lose, you know. And then just the fact that Cal is actually, like, playing to the strengths of the team, you know, and that's not something that he's always done, you know, with Trey Mitchell. And I know we'll get into some of that, but he's actually allowing for it to be a more one big in the paint traditional, like, type of lineup, you know, and playing four out, man. It's beautiful.
No, I get that for sure. So the past few years, you know, it's been, you know, I don't want to bring back any of the old, but, you know, there's been a lot of early exits in the NCAA tournament for the Kentucky Wildcats. And it seemed like, at least to me, it seemed like this year could be a different story. So what stands out to this team compared to maybe like the past, like, teams from like 2 to 3 years ago?
So I don't think that we have one player that is playing for their draft stock. You know, I think that everybody is playing for the other guys on the roster, first of all. And then second of all, man, I just think going back to that fight, you know, we've won, you know, obviously way more than we've lost. But in a lot of those games, you know, it comes down to a run, you know, a big defensive play or whatever the case may be. And these guys, they're willing to do whatever it takes to get that W.
No, I like that. I like that point that you made. You know, not everybody's playing for the draft. So, like, you can tell, like, this is more of a team-oriented team that's really playing together and just really trying to figure out a way to win. You know, I think because you could tell, like, in the previous years, you know, like, guys were really playing to, like, increase their draft stock and everything. But I think this is – I mean, this is definitely a different story, you know, like, this season compared to the last few years, per se.
Facts.
But, nah, but let's – so what were your thoughts on the non-conference schedule? Because y'all went 2-1 against top 25 teams. And then, you know, y'all ended up losing to Kansas, and then you guys ended up losing to UNC Wilmington. So what were your thoughts on the non-conference schedule as a whole?
So I would say I'm a little more realistic and even keeled than a lot of, like, the Kentucky fans, the Big Blue Nation. I'm actually pleased with what I've seen overall. Obviously, there's room for improvement. Right. But if you go back to the game against Kansas, you know, we didn't have any of our seven-footers there, and we almost won. You know,
so you only lost by 5.
Yeah, you know, and Hunter Dickinson had, like, damn near a career night, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And the UNC Wilmington game, you know, a loss is a loss. It should have never happened. But I will say that I think that that game was needed, not only for the guys on the actual team, but for the fan base, because at that time there was a lot of discourse around DJ. And I don't think that people understood that everything he brings to the team, you know, that is not necessarily a statistic. And they got to see what it looks like when other people are in that limelight as the starting PG, you know, for the full 40 minutes.
So it's crazy. I went back to watch the not the entire game against UNC Wilmington. I watched, like, the last, like, 5 minutes of the game because somebody ended up posting the last, like, the final stretch of the game on YouTube. So I went back and watched it today, and I don't know. It's like, at least from a play standpoint, like, I feel like Kentucky didn't necessarily play bad because, I mean, there was a lot of times where, you know, where they were battling defensively, they were fighting for loose balls and everything. Pause, but I don't know. I guess it was like, you know, with the guard play of UNC Wilmington, with the way that they were able to get to their spots inside the three-point line, I think that was really like the nail biter for the team. But overall, I didn't, even though they lost the game, I didn't feel like Kentucky had a bad performance. I just feel like, you know, they just kind of got caught on like an off night or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I definitely agree with you. Like, it was definitely, you know, a point where they could look at that game and then look to bounce back. And obviously you see they haven't lost since.
Mm-hmm. And one last thing, Nick, on the UNC Wilmington game, like, one thing that a lot of, like, the casual fans don't realize is that that team actually is expected to and is currently, like, leading in their conference. That's going to be an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah.
And that's a veteran team. And that one guard, I can't remember his name, he was killing, man. Like, you know, that guy, is going to be a pro somewhere, you know, and
easily,
you know, so it, like you said, man, like we didn't play our best, but we didn't play horrible. But of course, man, we're Kentucky, man. We get everybody's best game.
Not as a fact. I mean, I definitely bounced back. I can't remember how many games have y'all have won since, but I know that y'all recently just beat Louisville. So, I mean, it's clearly the team has bounced back, you know, since that performance. But let's dive into the freshmen, man. You know, they've got a strong freshman class here. Everybody's contributed at a high level. So let me ask you this real quick before we dive into, like, each player individually, because I'm sure that you've seen this, you know, a lot of the discourse between, you know, DJ Wagner and Rob Dillingham, you know, it's always about, you know, who should start or, you know, who's the better player. So how do you feel about that, you know, when people have those debates?
So I think it's crazy, and I'll bring Reed into it too, because I think that the fan base is split, you know, people that just watch the stats, people that favor certain players because of where they're from, or to be honest, even some of them, what they look like. And, you know, just different biases, and then people that watch ball from like a more pure standpoint. I'm just glad and blessed that they're all on the same goddamn team. You know what I mean? Like, having all three of them is a success for, you know, a lot of victories, man, as you've been seeing.
No, I definitely agree with that. And I like it too, you know, especially with these young guys. Like, you don't really see a lot of egos. Like, you know, they're out there, they play their role to perfection. You know what I'm saying? It's not about, you know, who wants to get the most points and everything. Like, they play to win, it's like we mentioned earlier. And, you know, that's something that I definitely like to see out of these young guys. But, you know, what has been your thoughts on DJ Wagner individually? Because, you know, you spoke highly of him, you know, earlier in the show. So what has been your thoughts on him? Because he's averaging 12 points a game, 3.5 assists with 41-30, 73 shooting splits. So what are your thoughts on him?
So, you know, as much as I root for the Wagner family, you know, being from South Jersey myself, I can be, you know, real. The numbers is nothing special, but DJ is, to be real, DJ is playing in a different role than he's played in his entire life. You know, every team DJ's been on, even if he's played the one, his role has been just to get buckets, you know. And I feel like what people aren't realizing is Cal is trying to prepare him in somewhat of a Tyrese Maxey type of fashion to be able to facilitate, you know, on a real level in the pros because of his size, you know, and also kind of learn to choose your spots to go get that bucket. And, you know, if you look at the tape, you know, no, he's not making everything, but he plays the game the right way.
He does.
And, you know, it's one of those things that as soon as the shots fall, the perception changes, you know. So I'm looking at DJ, you know, and how he's approaching the game. And I know the best is yet to come, but I'm most pleased with the way he leads. And you can see it. I go back to the UNC Wilmington game when he was in the huddle, but he wasn't out there. And he's quick, you know, he and Trey Mitchell are quick to grab those guys up and rally the troops, you know, when it's time to make that run and lock in and get that victory.
I definitely agree. I mean, that's one thing that I would say is that, you know, I mean, obviously the numbers, you know, especially like the shooting percentages, people may look at that and be like, oh, he's not a good player. But I think the one thing that stands out to me is that, you know, he's still capable of getting to the spots. And when he is in rhythm, you know, he demands the defense's attention, which opens up opportunities for others. So that's one thing that I definitely do like out of him. And it was only right that he played for Coach Cal, considering that his dad played for him in Kansas and everything. So, you know, I think it was the best decision for him to go play for at Kentucky.
Oh yeah, DeJuan was Cal's first one and done man at Memphis.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. So it was only right. It was definitely only right, but. What about Rob? Because he's a guy, I love his energy, especially, you know, being in that second unit for Kentucky. I actually went back and watched the game against Louisville today. You know, like, his shot making was incredible. And then on top of that, his playmaking was as well. So what have been your early thoughts on him?
Rob, as far as, like, you know, the flashy plays and being dynamic, he's everything, you know, I thought. But I'll say that he's farther along than I thought as far as, you know, Cal lets him play his brand of basketball, but it's somehow street, but is it within the flow of the game, you know? And he just brings something that you can't coach, you know? And he's the type of player on offense that no matter if he misses five shots in a row, he has that irrational confidence that you'll see from like somebody like J.R. Smith, where that sixth one is like he don't remember that he missed it the last five. And when that sixth one goes in, it's game over for you.
Right. And it's crazy, too, because as I was watching the game, I was trying to find like a comp. I don't really like to do comps, but I was trying to find one for him. I didn't know if I could compare him to like a Jamal Crawford or, you know, whatever it is. But like, you know, I feel like his energy off the bench, I feel like he thrives in that second unit and he looks to be his best, you know, coming off the bench, you know, especially playing with the rest of the starters. So, you know, he's a guy that's like has high octane offense. You know, it's really, really fun to watch him play. Another guy we could talk about is Aaron Bradshaw, who just recently made his return back, you know, after dealing with the foot injury. What has been your early thoughts on him?
I like what Aaron brings energy-wise. Like, he's just always looking to compete. And I will say, from watching him at Camden, I won't say I don't think he had a low motor, but I feel like being 7 foot in high school, you know, you can dominate whenever you feel like it.
Right.
You know, so I'm pleased to see that he's consistently out there giving it his all when he's on the court. The only thing with Aaron, and it's not a knock because he can shoot some, but I just feel like, and he's even talked about it like on podcasts and then media day and stuff. I feel like he's a little heavy on wanting to be like a wing player, you know, and it's like, you know, he's 7 foot, man. Like, you know, come on, man, do the things that you can naturally do to dominate the game, you know. And you see when he does them, he blocks shots at a decent level, he can rebound, you know, and as he continues to get stronger, man, you know, he's going to be a force.
How do you like him in that front court next to Trey Mitchell? Like, how do you think that's worked out? Because I feel like their connection has been really, really good.
I actually think that Trey Mitchell being on his team has benefited Aaron Bradshaw probably more than anybody because there's the mentorship there with Trey being an upperclassman, but there's the basketball fit because Trey's such a good shooter. And also good playmaker, whether it's, you know, at like the free throw line or at the 3-point line, it allows Aaron the freedom to, you know, whether it's go for the corner three and Trey drop down to the paint or, you know, Aaron's in the paint. It allows him to play his game the way he really, you know, can excel. So I think it's probably the second best pairing, you know, on the roster. The first, you know, honestly, right now being, you know, when Reed and Robert on the court.
No, I definitely agree with that. And that's something that I love, too, is, like, their connection, especially with the versatility that Trey Mitchell has. Like, there was a play in the Louisville game where Trey had caught the ball on the high post, and then you see Aaron, you know, run to the dunker spot, and then Trey finds him immediately. So I love that connection between the two bigs. I mean, it's really, really exciting. Last freshman that I want to talk about, because, I mean, you mentioned him earlier, was Reed Sherrod, which is, in my opinion, one of my personal favorites on the team. I love his playmaking, and I love the way that he gets after it on defense. Talk about him a little bit.
So the first thing I want to say about Reed is I think that people should better research players. And what I mean is that people talk about Reed like he's a walk-on, you know, getting these minutes. But Reed was a McDonald's All-American, you know, and the kid of two Kentucky players, you know, his mom and dad, you know, played at Kentucky. And he just plays the game, you know, with a high IQ, you know. And I don't know if his percentage is still quite as high as it was, but I know at one point, man, he was like the leading, like, three-point shooter in the country, shooting something crazy like 60-something percent from three. But Reed is special, man, and I think that a lot of fans – you know, especially fans in Kentucky are going to be disappointed because I think they thought that they would have a multi-year player. And at the rate that he's playing, I would be highly shocked if Reed is there next year or beyond.
That's actually interesting. So you do believe that he'll be one and done and that he'll find professional opportunities after this?
I mean, I just feel like the way he's playing right now, I mean – not that mock drafts mean anything, but it's people, you know, talking Reed in a lot, you know, and it's one of those things, knowing who Cal is, he's going to push him when his stocks is as high as it's going to be.
No, I definitely get that, you know, I mean, especially with all of the products that that Coach Cal is having, especially a lot of one and done guys. So, you know, I definitely agree with you as far as, you know, pushing Reed Sherrod to possibly, you know, move forward, you know, take that professional opportunity. But I want to talk about Antonio Reeves for a second because I think his veteran presence has been really, really important. You know, I believe that he's the best player on the team. I mean, he clearly shows it on both ends. He's the leading scorer on the team, averaging 19 a game. Talk about how much his veteran presence. I mean, we talked about Trey Mitchell as well, you know, with him being an upperclassman. But talk about Antonio Reeves as well.
Well, getting Antonio back was the biggest thing in the offseason, man. Like, you know, the freshman class, you know, as high-ranked as they were, was great. But, you know, having somebody that produced at the level that, you know, Reeves did last season come back, and that's after there was rumors that he wasn't coming back, you know, massive, man, for us. And, you know, his scoring, the variety of ways he can get a bucket, and the fact that he is like a, you know, man, like if he gets one three ball to go down, you know, you almost feel like he can't miss, you know. And I just think that he brings a certain mentality, you know, being a player that was previously at Illinois State, you know, coming from Chicago and Simeon, if I'm not mistaken, you know, he just has a certain mentality that some of these guys that, you know, not on necessarily on his current team, but some of the guys we had in the past, blue chippers, don't necessarily have.
I think the one thing that stands out to me when I watch Antonio Reeves is, you know, especially, you know, when Kentucky may go into slumps, or, you know, where a team may go on a run, I feel like he's the guy that you can go to that can get you a bucket, and he can kind of change momentum from there. It's like you mentioned, you know, once he gets one three-pointer going, you know, he's in rhythm, and, you know, there's really no stopping him from then on. So I love his leadership on the team. How do you think his impact has, you know, influenced, you know, the other freshman guys, like we mentioned, like DJ, like Rob, like Reed, like, you know, like the other, like the younger guys?
I think it's huge, man, because one thing with Reeves, like whether he's shooting the ball well or, you know, he's struggling offensively, he's a really even keel guy, you know, from what I can see. And, you know, with a team with a lot of freshmen, you need that. And it's been big for all of them. But I will say that I think, you know, the veterans have been huge for all of the guys, but especially, you know, DJ during his slump, if you will, and Justin Edwards too. Because, yes. You know, that's a guy that came in with high expectations. Some people were talking number one pick. And, you know, the play, he's finding his way. But – having guys that's kind of been there, done that, you know, continuing to encourage you and maybe give you tips in real time on how you can, you know, still be an effective part of the team, man. You can't beat that.
I definitely agree with that, man. Now let's go ahead and dive in like a little bit more into Trey Mitchell, because like I said, he's probably one of my personal favorites that I've watched so far with Kentucky. First year after transferring last year from West Virginia, averaging around 12 a game. 7 rebounds, a little over 1 steal a game. You know, I mean, we already talked about his versatility, but can you dive a little bit more deeper into it?
So, Trey Mitchell, you know, I know he played at West Virginia and everything, but I'll say Trey is actually better even than I thought that he was. And I'll go to the Kansas game. You know, he was undersized against Hunter Dickinson, but he held his own the entire game. Perhaps. And, He plays the game with an extremely high IQ. You know, he's rarely ever out of position defensively. You know, he makes the right pass, you know, on offense. He never holds the ball too long. Sometimes I wish he'd be a little more selfish, you know, with the way he can shoot the three. But overall, you can argue that you're hard-pressed if you watch the tape to find, you know, him making the wrong play. And that, you know, that goes a long way on a young overall young team. You know, he's a competitor, and his leadership is louder than any stat that he has. And even though he's shooting, I believe, over 40% from three, but Trey Mitchell's a gamer, man. And you know, to go back a ways, Kentucky teams have always had success with an experienced four man. You know, you go back to Patrick Patterson. You go back to second year Terrence Jones. You know, it just is something about that combination that bodes well for us.
I definitely agree. I definitely do want to see him possibly space the floor a little bit more and knock down 3-point shots. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, his post play is really, really good. But when you allow him to step out and, you know, take more opportunities from beyond the arc, I feel like it opens up a lot more on the offense for Kentucky. And I think we've seen like a small package of it, you know, throughout the season. But I personally would love to see a little bit more of it.
Facts. And he's an underrated passer, too.
He is. No, he definitely is, man, for sure. Do you feel like with his experience and his leadership, do you feel like that plays a role in, you know, within you guys possibly, you know, making a deep run in the tournament?
Absolutely. You know, when you – so, for example, like, the difference to me, like, with Reeves and Mitchell, their experience, both highly valuable. But, you know, Mitchell, he came from, you know, another, like, power conference team, you know, and he played for another Hall of Fame coach. You know, I think that it's something to be said about that. And it shows, you know, just the way that I feel like his quiet, almost underrated leadership shows itself, you know.
I definitely agree with that. No doubt. Let's dive into the Blue Blood matchup that took place about a few weeks back between Kentucky and North Carolina. I went back and watched that game as well. That was a very up and down performance, but give credit to Kentucky. I feel like Kentucky's defense was like at its best in that matchup. I know that North Carolina had its run, especially, you know, with RJ Davis, you know, leading the way, but I feel like Kentucky really hung their hat on defense. So what was your biggest takeaway from that win?
We got punched and we didn't quit, man. You know, Cormac Ryan and RJ Davis combined for 47 points.
Yeah, they shine. You know,
typically, that, you know, that's not enough by itself to win, but that's a damn good start, you know. But those guys, man, they didn't quit, and every run UNC made, they were right there, you know. And going back to a lot of the discourse on DJ, you know, I feel like a lot of the fans saw a glimpse of what I've seen, you know, since he was a kid. You know, and that's a guy that wants the moment, that wants the ball, you know, in the clutch. Get out of my way and let me go to work. And Rob, man, like, Rob is somewhere in the – not the similarity of play style, but it's somewhere in that, you know, Jamal Crawford, Lou Will. I'm gonna find a way. And next thing you know, instead of 1 for 5 – I'm like 7 for 13, you know, from the floor. You know, that going back to what I said before, that irrational confidence, man, as a shooter and as a passer, you know, has been, you know, huge for us.
I definitely agree. It's like I say, you know, I've always been a big fan of Rob throughout the course of this year. And, you know, he seems like, you know, his confidence is never shaken, you know, no matter what pressure may be, you know, no matter what the situation of the game may be, you know, he's always going to look to make the right play. He's always going to look to get a bucket. So that's something that definitely stands out to me when it comes to him. Before we get out of here, so SEC play is about to take place. You guys play Florida on Saturday. Last year, y'all went 12-6 in conference play. So what is your expectations going into this year's SEC matchups?
So, you know, I think that At worst, I would think, you know, if healthy, we finish second in the conference. But I do feel like we can win the conference. I mean, Tennessee is good this year, man, with, you know, Dalton, Connect, and those guys. But, you know, this is arguably the most balanced team, you know, I feel like that we've had, you know, top to bottom. And, you know, we've got scoring, we've got defense, we've got experience. And there was a guy that we didn't talk about at all in Adu Thoreau.
I meant to ask you about him because I know that he was hurt last time I checked.
Yeah.
So, like, are there any timetables as far as him coming back?
I mean, I think they expect him back soon, but I think with our depth, they're not rushing it. But I don't know who you could argue that you take the minutes from, I guess, because, you know, Edwards is starting to pick it up and you want to keep his confidence high. But I just don't know how you keep, you know, a dude off the court, man. Like, the way he defends, you know, he makes hustle plays. You know, he makes plays that I don't know, man, like only probably like 1% of the guys like out there and even at the next level make. And the fact, you know, he made a few plays, got some minutes last year, but growing a 6'8", man, I feel like that's changed the outlook on him and his future completely.
I definitely agree. You know, I know the last time I did check, you know, like I think Callum made a statement saying that, you know, he was inching closer to return, but nobody was 100% sure. So, I mean, if they do find a way to have him, like, you know, at least like throughout this conference, but I think it'd be really, really good. But is there any other team besides Tennessee that you can see that could be like a little bit of a threat to Kentucky in the SEC?
Overall, as far as like winning the conference, I think Tennessee's the main competition. But overall, like as far as like when we play them,
yeah,
you know, Texas A&M's a really tough team. You know, a really balanced team. They defend, and they've got some experienced guard play. So I think they're tough. You know, they were ranked, you know, until recently. And then, like you said, we're about to play Florida. You know, what's his name, man? Is it Riley Kugel or whatever? Like, that dude is a bucket, you know. They always, excuse me, play as tough. And then
what do you think about Auburn?
Man, listen, Auburn is a perplexing team because I feel like they're a team that can play to the competition in a bad way at times. But listen, man, those guys can play. Like they're playing pretty well this year. Like, I'm taking Kentucky versus anybody, but
right.
It would not shock me if they were able to get a W, man. Like they're playing really, you know, good basketball right now, you know, and over the last few seasons, they've done a good job of keeping guys there, you know, not losing them to the portal, but also bringing in impact players from the portal. And the freshman guard that they have, man, his name's escaping me right now, but that's the type of player that can give you 20, 30, you know.
Is it Aiden?
Yep, Aiden Holloway.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's nice. I ain't like, he's a bucket. But nah, I'll be real. Like, you know, I know that there's not a lot of teams ranked in the SEC, but, you know, at least for, like, from small glimpses of me watching a few teams, I think the competition is there. So, and I'll be real. I think I definitely agree with you. I think Kentucky can definitely finish top two. I think it's going to be a battle between them and Tennessee. But, you know, overall, the conference is actually not as bad as people may think it is just because, like, you know, a lot of teams aren't ranked. So, you know, I mean, there's definitely going to be some good competition. But last question before we get out of here, man, I want to get your thoughts on a lot of the Kentucky guys that are in the NBA right now, because a lot of them are shining right now. You got SGA out in OKC. He's looking like an MVP candidate. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox with Sacramento leading that team to playoff success. You got Karl Anthony Towns in Minnesota. You got Maxey, who looks like a most approved like candidate in Philly. And then, of course, you got IQ, who just got traded to Toronto. So, like, you know, how have you felt about a lot of these former Kentucky guys shining in the NBA?
Listen, man, when, you know, the NBA cats, they've been holding it down, man, for sure. I'll start, you know, SGA. I'm a little biased, but if OKC continues at this level of play, I mean, they're only like a game behind Minnesota to take the number one seed in the West.
Right.
Well, you know, with Shea averaging, you know, 31, just under 6 boards and a little over 6 assists a game and leading the league in steals, if they take first in the West and hold it, I think he is the MVP, you know, just my biased opinion. Because OKC is further along, and I know it's not just him, you know, it's Chet, it's the improvement of Dort and stuff, but
right.
That, you know, you gotta give it to the best player on that team, and they're further along.
And they're nowhere near where they are right now without the play SGA.
Yeah.
But not. Mm-hmm. What you been thinking about Maxey, though, out of Philly?
Maxey, man, I love what he's doing right now. You know, I feel like he benefited the most from the James Harden trade. And I'm just glad that, you know, the world can kind of see what he can do. And now, you know, that we're, you know, a little further into the season, they can see that this is really just the level that he plays at. You know, it's not a fluke or anything like that. You know, he's a gamer. You know, I'll go back, you know, to him in high school, AAU. Like, you know, I remember him, you know, just his two-way play impacting the game on both ends in the EYBL, man. Like, you know, I've been a fan ever since. So I was glad. It's great to see that translate.
I definitely agree. And one last question, man. So I just mentioned earlier, Mayo quickly just got traded from New York to Toronto. How do you think that's going to pan out for him? Because I want to say he's been looking for a bigger role anyway. So do you think that he could thrive as a starting point guard for the team?
I think he will. And I think that, you know, people have to be careful with when they're watching him play. Well, actually, they'll have to watch him play. I'll say that.
Right.
Because I think, you know, you could easily see a slight drop in his scoring numbers. But I think you'll start to see an uptick in those assist numbers, you know, with the lead guard duties. And I think that, you know, it'll be refreshing for fans to get to see him, you know, in a different role than that instant offense role that they had him in New York.
I'm excited for him, man. I'm excited. I mean, obviously, he was a sixth man of the year candidate last year with New York. And I feel like he's only elevated his game as time progressed. But I've been telling people either way, it's like, you know, if you watch him at Kentucky, especially that 2019-20 year, like he's been electric, and you know, he's been a bucket ever since, man. So I'm excited about his new start in Toronto, and like, you know, we'll just have to see how that pans out. But my guy Will, I appreciate you for joining on, man. I know that it's late, man, but I definitely appreciate your time, man. I'm definitely gonna be sending you some new pieces soon for the website, man. But nah, man, definitely let the people know where to find you, man, and what you got coming up.
Oh well, you know, Will Lyons, the Lyons Den, and Generations of the Game podcast, and you know, going back to the Lyons Den, you know, we're growing, man. And one of the main reasons is, you know, this man right here, my guy Nick Andre, you know, a key contributor for us, you know, and I appreciate you and your contributions, you know, to the publication and for, you know, having me on the show, brother. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Not a problem, man. We're definitely going to have you on again, especially, you know, probably closer to the tournament or even after the tournament. But nah, make sure to follow the show on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I love the TGB ball. Follow myself and Nick Andre ATR. And make sure to subscribe anywhere that you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. And appreciate you guys for listening. And until next time, you guys, deuces.